Welcome to episode 29 of Dolphin Tales. I'm your host, Scott Manzi, joined as always by my co-host, Pat Sitkins. On today's episode, two more great conversations with members of the Jacksonville University athletics community. First up, Pat sits down with longtime friend and former teammate, Jason Riles, a baseball alum who currently works in real estate here in the Jacksonville area. After that, my conversation with Molly Brock of the nationally ranked women's lacrosse program. All that and more coming up on episode 29 of Dolphin Tales, presented by Baptist Health. Baptist Health is the official healthcare provider of Jacksonville University Athletics. Baptist Health, changing healthcare for good. Coming up after the break, Pat's conversation with Jason Riles.
While the world is staying home, the need to save lives never stops. Those of us who are part of the Baptist Health family know that the work we are called to do has never been more important than right now. So, to everyone who has made sacrifices, big or small, in order to continue serving our community, thank you, Baptist Health, the official health care provider of the Jacksonville Dolphins.
This is Jacksonville women's basketball head coach Darnell Haney. Shenatry Chiropractic is a proud sponsor of JU Athletics, located east of downtown in the Arlington neighborhood. Shenatry Chiropractic specializes in acupuncture for pain relief and sports performance. See how their quality chiropractic care can help you with back pain, neck pain, auto accidents, sciatica, and more. For more information about Shenatry Chiropractic, please visit chanatrydc.com. Shenatry Chiropractic.
Joining me on this episode of Dolphin Tales is a man who has been mentioned in probably half the interviews we've done, so I figured we'd had to bring him on now. So Jason Riles, former JU baseball alum, friend, teammate, guy I've known for a long time. Jason, thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. So watch a bunch of the podcast. Very cool concept you have going on here. It's cool to see what the old teammates and old athletes are doing. So I'm surprised it took this long for you to get me on, but I did Google like the top 100 JU athletes, and I was like 45th.
Okay.
So I'm ahead of my schedule on that.
Well, there you go. Yeah, absolutely.
I appreciate that.
I did. I mean, I texted you right away and said, hey, just so you know, you're on the list. You were on the short list. So
yeah.
We had to get some of the other ones down, you know, to get more interest and then bring you on. You can't burn, you know, one of the best athletes of all time.
The fans wanted to see what Dover and Nick was up to.
You got to give the people what they want, right?
Absolutely.
Well, Jason, so I was actually thinking back, and it seemed like we played together a lot longer than we did, but I guess we had 2 years together. Mm-hmm. So my freshman year, you would have been a junior. So late 90s, early 2000s, what I'm terming the golden era of JU, when things were maybe at its height for athletics overall.
Yeah.
I mean, it seemed like so many good things were happening with, you know, the different programs, and certainly with baseball. So I always like talking about kind of the beginning, you know, mm-hmm. So go all the way back and we'll go through what you're doing now. But talk to me a little bit about, you know, coming from Gainesville, how you found JU and how you joined the team.
Yeah, born and raised in Gainesville, University of Florida didn't think highly of my baseball ability, which deservedly so, found JU, knew I wanted to go to a small private school. I went to a private school in high school that had 40 kids in the graduating class. I was not cut out to go to a UCF or South Florida, one of the big schools. So I applied to JU, Stetson, and University of Tampa. All three were recruiting me for baseball as kind of a recruited walk-on. I was not a Chad Oliver scholarship level type guy. So came up here, fell in love with a very, very cool campus. For those of you who haven't been to JU, it's an outstanding campus, just a hidden gem here in East Arlington, Jacksonville. Came to school and walked onto the baseball program. First year freshman came out. When I graduated high school, I was 17. I was young, just turned 17. I actually had a fake ID to get into 18 and up bars my freshman year at JU, just so I didn't even have to drink, just so I could get in. I got cut my freshman year, didn't make the team. Kept playing, kind of threw with some guys. Sophomore year, I guess would be my sophomore year. Tried out again, made the team, and then played for 4 years with guys like you. And yeah, it's amazing. You look back and you're friends nowadays, and oh, so and so played at JU. I'm like, yeah, I played with him. And then you realized you played with him for a year,
right?
And you made a lifetime of memories. Like, you feel like that guy is as close as possible. You played with him for 6 months,
right?
Like, I know everything about the guy still. So that's what brought me to Jacksonville. Wouldn't change a thing about it. I loved being close to Gainesville to go home and get a home-cooked meal. I love being far enough away to be an adult and have to do things on your own from time to time. So it was good to get away, but to be close. That's how I got to Jacksonville. My sister ended up following me. She was in your class. My sister was 2 years behind me. She played volleyball at JU. My wife played volleyball at JU. So we've got a lot of Dolphin blood in the family. So
that's right.
Good stuff.
Yeah, we talked about, you know, the family, and we certainly had a close-knit group of friends going through the family that kind of spanned outside of baseball into soccer, intramurals with Andy and things like that. But you're right, you know, you go back and you look at the guys that we played with, and like I said, even with you, I mean, I've kept in touch with you since you graduated. Mm-hmm. I had 2 more years of playing, but, you know, I went to your wedding. Actually, I didn't even go to the actual ceremony. I went to the reception because we had a doubleheader that weekend. Yep. So I drove down. You came to my wedding, but, you know, it seemed like we played a lot longer than just 2 years. But it's just those bonds that are made, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I even referred to you as my son for 10 years because I could tell when you came to JU, you were not on the right path.
Well, thank you.
And so I had to steer you in the right direction. But yeah,
you and Jess, really.
Yeah, and before you got there, guys like Nate Stewart, I roomed with 3 basketball players here in the apartments. I was texting with Nate Stewart last weekend. Nate played basketball, I guess he was a year older than me, and we still keep in touch. He lives in Melbourne, got 2 kids that are scary that they're like 14 and 12 now, and you know, it's crazy how time flies. But yeah, it's from Nate with basketball guys to Dove with soccer guys to Boz with volleyball people, yeah. The JU athletic community, everybody was family and brothers and sisters, so pretty cool.
And we all made it out okay.
Yeah,
and mostly.
My sister always complained because she was always nervous to date somebody at JU because she had 40 older brothers on the baseball team that were looking out for her and kind of giving guys the side eye when she would try to date somebody. Like, that's Jason's sister. You be careful.
So nice.
She also said it was great because if she ever went out to a party, she had 40 people to look after her.
That's true.
But good community taking care of each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I dropped the kids off this morning, so I walked around for a second, and you were talking about, you know, coming to the games, you know, parking your boat down here. I walked down this little boardwalk that I've never even been on, just to see the O-Search, and then, you know, as I was walking over here, I saw just a bunch of, it looked like the ladies rowing team mm-hmm. getting done with practice, and just to see all them, like, getting done and, you know, kind of mixing it up and walking to class and walking back to departments, it brought back a lot of that feeling of, like, man, this was a great time, you know, to have that camaraderie and have that group of 40 guys that pretty instantly became, you know, close friends, family, and all that. I was a little bit jealous, you know. They're like, not a care in the world, just got done with practice, you know, and just awesome.
Being young was fun, so.
It was. It seems like yesterday and also a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
A little bit of both. So like me, you stayed in Jacksonville. I've bounced back and forth, but finally settled here. But you've been here the whole time. So talk to me a little bit about what kept you in Jacksonville, because I think it would have been easy maybe to go back to Gainesville, you know.
So what kept you here? My wife played volleyball here. We met our freshman year in JU 101. She's from Oregon. We dated kind of through college. I'll say off and on to be correct, but we dated throughout college. And then when we graduated, I had the opportunity to go back and work for my dad in Gainesville, and he has a real estate company down there, and, you know, step into his shoes. And Jess and I just thought Jacksonville was the place to be. It had the beach, had more restaurants. Gainesville's a great city, great place to raise a family, but It's just a little smaller, and we had kind of fallen in love with the city. So of course we graduate, and I say, let's go to the beach and look for a place to live. And my wife, being much more culturally diverse than I am and smarter than I am, had spent some time at the Cummer Art Museum doing internships and stuff, and she said, let's go look in Riverside. That part of town's great. And from JU, the other side of the river is the other side of the world. We never went that way unless it was Florida Georgia weekend and we were going to the Landing.
That's right.
And we never went past the Landing over into Riverside. So my wife and I go, girlfriend at the time, we go look at houses over in Riverside, and I kind of went, man, this is a cool part of town. And we bought a little bungalow over there, and we've moved from Avondale to Murray Hill to Ortega, and then we're moved to a new house in Ortega, and so we've kind of bounced around the west side of Jacksonville, and that's kind of how we stuck around in Jacksonville. I've got an 11-year-old daughter and an 8-year-old son. They go to school literally across the street from our house. They walk out the front door and walk across the sidewalk and go into their school, so very cool to have that community. And Jacksonville, being in real estate now, Jacksonville is a large city made up of communities.
Right.
There's the Atlantic Beach, and Ponte Vedra has got its community, and the Ortega, Avondale, and the San Marco, and then St. John's County's got its own, and everybody kind of stays in their little pods. And our little pod over there with our Avondale restaurants and country club and school and friends it's pretty cool. And that's hard when you live at the beach.
Right.
I mean, Houseman and Oliva have been here the whole time too. I've probably seen them, I mean, it's right after college, we hung out with them quite a bit, but in the last 10 years, I've probably seen Oliva and Houseman at TPC, I'll see them.
Sure.
You know, Florida Georgia game, like when there's certain events, we'll see them, but driving 40 minutes to Ponte Vedra is, I love those guys, but man, that's a hike, and our kids are busy doing sports, their kids are playing softball and golf and lacrosse, and mine are doing other stuff, and just never.
Yeah, you got to plan months ahead if you're going to come out to the beach.
Yeah, so we moved to the west side. I started working immediately out of college. I sent out letters to commercial real estate brokers. Had several reach out to me, but one particular said, "Hey, I'll hire you as a junior agent, pay you hourly, get your feet wet, kind of get." And I was working at Outback at night, giving people like you free blooming onions and stuff like that, and then doing real estate. And I would do real estate from like 8 to 2 and then go to Outback from 3 to 10 or 11. And after 2 or 3 years of doing that, looking at my taxes, I realized that I'd made a lot more money in real estate than Outback. And so I kind of said, well, this part can go away now. And I was fortunate. Jess was working, so we had two incomes. And moved out from underneath Gary Montour, who was my mentor. And then I picked up a Sonic account, some other accounts, and started doing better and really started focus on real estate. And since then, I wouldn't change a thing. So been very fortunate how that all played out.
There you go. Well, I think the Outback's gone now, isn't it? So I think you made the right move.
That Outback closed.
There's still commercial buildings here.
Yeah.
So
Outback moved east out on Atlantic to the higher income area out towards the beaches. So Outback, yeah, I made the right move.
There you go. Yeah, now I remember you working at Outback. I remember your first house. I remember trying to navigate over there. Like you said, going, you know, from here over there, it was like a whole other world. So
and that was before your phone
would before, take it. Yeah, Siri couldn't take me anywhere. I had to like call you turn by turn, and I'm sure I got lost.
Yeah, and then bring it full circle. I mean, we used to go to the Fridays in Regency all the time.
Which is also gone, isn't it?
And Fridays is gone, but I'm working on some deals to fill that building up. They're going to turn that building into a little 2 or 3 unit retail center, and they've got a well-known coffee shop working on one end, and I've got some tenants looking at the other end, and so kind of just...
Well, it'll be dollar amber box, though, wherever, whoever's going to move in there. That's the question.
Say it again?
Are they going to have dollar amber box?
Dollar amber box?
Yes.
The bartender's name Friday, or is
it like, I don't remember that.
God.
We'll cut that. No, we won't.
we'll cut that.
So it's funny you're talking about real estate, because I was, you know, again, just kind of thinking through, you know, our time here and just getting ready for this. But I remember when you first started. So was it Colliers when you first started? Because you guys went through a transition at some point.
Yeah. So I've been with Colliers for 18 years.
Okay.
LinkedIn reminds me every year how old I'm getting.
There you go.
Been with them the whole time. Started in 2003. And then in 2000, it was Colliers Dickinson at the time. Colliers was a franchise company.
Okay.
And the local franchise was owned by a guy named Walter Dickinson, who had had it for 30 years. And then in 2010, Walter, one in 2010, the economy had done this. So the company wasn't making money. And Walter was mid-70s and kind of ready to retire and didn't want to do the 10-year fight to get the company back up profitable. And so me and a couple other partners bought Walter out. And so we owned the company from 2010 to 2016. And then in 2015, Colliers went publicly traded. So the Colliers International is now a publicly traded firm like CBRE and Cushman and some of the other big firms. And when they went publicly traded, they wanted to get rid of the franchises. So they came in and bought the local markets. They bought Greenville and Atlanta and Miami, and they bought the Jacksonville office in 2016. So we sold it to them. And now I'm just back to being a broker. I don't own the company anymore. I don't have to deal with if the paper clips are out or if the printer's jammed or if the receptionist isn't feeling well. So I'm just back to selling stuff and not having to run a company. But it was a great experience. I mean, learning how to do the P&Ls on a company and the operations and financials and dealing with partners was a good learning experience. And obviously, if you bought something in 2010 and sold it in 2016, it was probably financially reasonable as well. So
right.
Good experience and good income. But so now it's Colliers International. I'm just one of our 24 brokers doing real estate. So I specialize in retail. I help companies like Aldi and 7-Eleven and O'Reilly's Auto Parts and Orange Theory Fitness and IHOP and Express Auto, people like that, find locations. At the time when I was here at JU, I actually was a geography major. I did a senior project with Rael Dukowski on GIS mapping permits in the city, whether it was residential, commercial, industrial, or retail, and we mapped all the commercial permits pulled. At the time, I had no idea that would apply to real life. retailers that I work with rely a lot on GIS, and they have 30 or 40 data points that they can use algorithms to figure out which places are going to be good and which places are going to be bad. And I really don't tell Aldi where to go. They have a computer that says we want to be here at Durbin, and then my job is to go to Durbin and find them the best spot. And it's just cool that JU's geography department, I can relate to what my retailers are seeing.
Right.
We need an average income of 82,000. We need traffic counts of this. We need this kind of ethnic diversity. We need these kind of retailers around us. We need this kind of office employment around us for daytime. And all those go into a computer and it goes, here's your plan. So
nice. And so didn't you bring, was it 7-Eleven back to Jacksonville? I know you had your part in a few pretty big companies either coming initially to Jacksonville or coming back.
Yeah, so 7-Eleven had a non-compete with Gate. They sold all their stores to Gate in 1991, and that wore off in 2011. I was not responsible for bringing them back. I didn't go to them and say, hey, you need to come back.
It sounds better that way.
Through working, we ran into each other, and I helped them find sites in 2011, and they did 18 or 19 of them. Over a couple year period, and then they stopped. They turned their funding off for Jacksonville. They focused more on South Florida, and then just recently they're back in the market, and we have 8 or 9 deals working with them again. And this time around is, when they came last time, they did a bunch of just the convenience stores out at the beach with no gas and kind of just the 7-Eleven convenience store, and this time it's big gas, 4,600 square foot building, 10 pumps, more of the Wawa Gate model.
Gotcha.
So they're out in St. Johns County and Clay County and Yulee, Nassau County, the high growth areas,
right,
doing big gas.
So. Right. So with commercial real estate, I mean, everyone has obviously been affected by COVID, and you hear, big cities like New York and things like that where commercial is just really kind of tanked. Mm-hmm. It seems like that's not really happening in Jacksonville. I mean, at least from my perspective, not being in the industry, but just driving around town and not seeing a ton of signs go up. So what are you seeing right now in the city, I guess citywide, or where you're working?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of experts that if there was a Vegas betting line on the market in early 2021 in Florida, they would have lost a lot of money. I think, you know, April or May, we've been due for a little softening for 5 or 6 years. I mean, we've been up since 2010, kind of on a growth pattern, and cycles don't usually last 11, 12 years. They go 7 or 8 years. So we've kind of been waiting for a softening, whether it was interest rates going up, and then COVID hit and everybody went, okay, it's a pandemic, it's going to soften the market. Jacksonville has not softened a bit. There's sectors. I mean, if you own a movie theater, you're probably not happy. If you own fitness centers, you probably got hurt. If you're in office leasing, you're probably a little slow. A lot of the big companies with office leasing are still trying to figure out, can they have 40% work from home and not pay rent on a 20,000 square foot office plate downtown where they're paying $1 million a year in rent? So office leasing still on hold. Retail, like I said, movie theaters, fitness, like there were small sectors of retail that got hurt. Restaurants got hurt. If you owned a sit-down restaurant, if you owned Roy's at the beach, I'm sure you had a tough year. But fast food restaurants are up, delivery's up, and prices have gone up. I mean, we just came out with our first quarter market retail market report. Vacancies 2% above where it was last year, but that's probably more just some big boxes closing, some Sears and JCPenney's that were big chunks that made the vacancy go up. The small shop space is still at the same price. And retail, you know, they always read these articles about retail being dead because of Amazon. And retail just evolves. It's people forget retail's anything that serves people. So there's a new concept coming out of COVID that's called ghost kitchens. 15 months ago, I'd never heard of a ghost kitchen. It's literally a 10,000 square foot building that does not have to be on a main road. So it's back in an office park or on Penman Road or something. Mm-hmm. It's literally a building that has 8 kitchens in it, and the kitchens are Firehouse Sub, Tzatziki's, Papa John, and it's only delivery for Grubhub, Uber Eats, and they set up the parking lot where Uber Eats has its parking spaces and Grubhub has its parking spaces, and so you get on your phone, and so instead of, because what's happened is the restaurants have gotten crushed, their kitchen was designed to handle the restaurant,
right,
not handle the restaurant and the delivery, and with COVID, all these deliveries are going out the back door, and the kitchens are getting crushed. They can't handle it, so they're going to develop these ghost kitchens where it's a building with kitchens and it's just for delivery.
Wow.
You'll never go there as a customer, but that's where your DoorDash comes from, not from the restaurant.
And I've heard that there is a problem with people having to do like a separate ordering system and trying to deal with customers coming in and doing the takeout. Even like the sushi place by my house, there you can see them like trying to take care of the people at the counter, trying to get their call-ins, but then also they're sitting there on their iPad trying to deal with the DoorDash or whatever. So
yeah, you go to Firehouse,
never heard
and they
of
have
that
table sitting there and it says Grubhub,
right,
it's DoorDash, like the Firehouse has the different stations. Well, that's gonna stop and it'll be run out of these other buildings. They're gonna, so it's
incredible.
Something COVID created that nobody really saw coming, and it's interesting how just retail kind of evolves.
Right.
So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, to go all the way back, you know, I was thinking about when you first started. I remember I had to use you as like my, not mentor, but I had a class. I remember we had to go out and find a business leader in town. And yeah, and so I found you, obviously. It was future planning.
The one guy that wore slacks to work, you found him.
It, basically, that you were the only person I knew, yeah. And but yeah, I remember I had to do a project and you had to teach me a little bit about commercial real estate, and I had to present that to the class, and I remember I had my little flyer, and I was talking about all the different things, and thought I was like doing great.
Man, I'd love to go back and see what that presentation looked like.
It was probably not good. I think I probably did well.
Yeah, it was one of the business 101 classes or something. Yeah.
Oh no, this was like senior level.
Marketing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a marketing class.
Yeah, and somehow I used commercial real estate to. It's a business. It's all the same.
You were an athlete. You were gonna get it.
Oh, I didn't know. That's right. Let's go back to athletics. So I want to talk a little bit more about baseball. I mean, we had some pretty good runs back in the day. I mean, we've talked to Brian Williams, we've talked to House, we've talked to Oliva, and you know, to have those guys, House and Oliva, you know, Oliva, JU Hall of Fame, Houseman's petitioning hard. He's got a hashtag.
Did he really?
We did it for him. You know, but to see those guys up, you know, they're All-American cards up, and just to think back through, I was actually talking to Bob Shepherd the other day, and he was saying that the 01 team was the best team he's ever coached.
Yeah.
Now, whether he was just saying that because me and House were there, I don't know, but I mean, I was part of the 03 team when, you know, we won the tournament and did all that. But the 01 team to me was the best team I've ever been part of.
Yeah, I talked to Coach Shepherd a month ago and he said the same thing.
Okay.
A team at UNF that he really enjoyed coaching. But he said that 01 team was incredible. And it was a special team. I mean, to take 2 out of 3 from Miami on the road, to beat Florida State, it was pretty remarkable. At the time, you don't appreciate how good it was.
Right.
And then I come back, my kids, we come back to 5 or 6 games a year, and they see Oliva and Houseman on the wall, and they go, "Dad, there's your roommate." And I'm like, "Yeah." And then my son goes, "Why don't you have a picture up there?" And I go, "Well, because I didn't bat 480 and have 17 home runs, buddy. I did other stuff that was very important on the team."
I threw changeups.
Yeah, I threw changeups.
Lots of them.
Yeah. lots of them. And looking back, just how cool that team was. It's interesting to me, and I use it as an example all the time, how as college athletes, you're still young, and how we had our pitching coach, Coach Joe Fletcher, God rest his soul, was our pitching coach that year, and he had every one of us believing we were going to go pro.
Yeah.
Like I don't remember him being that mentally out there, but he had everybody in the bullpen, "Jason, you are Greg Maddux, and your ball's moving and sinking, and you're hitting spots." And then Joe left, and we had almost the same team in 02. Mm-hmm. We had 6 or 7 conference preseason guys, same staff. We lost a pitcher or two off of 01, like Regis, I think, maybe. Or
no, Regis was there. We lost our ace. We had Dawes. But it was
02, our team was middle. We finished middle of the conference. I don't know if it was just because Joe Fletcher left or just the team didn't quite gel, but we had, you know, Ryer and Weed and Oliva and Houseman and Nover, and our lineup was stacked, and we had B-Dub pitching Friday night, and our pitchers were good, and just Corson.
And B-Dub that year, I mean, we had him out. He was my first interview, and I didn't even remember this till we got into it, and Scott Manzi, who produces this, was telling me, and then Brian was talking about it. He was like he had the lowest ERA in the country.
His first 50 innings, he gave up 2 earned runs.
And I remember them talking about it, and I was like, oh, yeah.
He pitched every Friday night. We had remember that back then? We had 2 7-inning games.
Yeah.
And then we had a 9-inning game on Saturday. And B-Dub would throw the first 7-inning game on Friday. And every game he went 6 innings, he gave up no hits and gave up like 4 hits. Or gave up no runs and 4 hits.
Yeah, we'd sit in our turfs on that one.
Yeah, we won every Friday night game. And then we'd lose or split the next two. And we finished like 500 in the conference. But yeah, B-Dub's stats that year were incredible.
Yeah.
So.
And you're right. I mean, it was a lot of the same guys. And then the very next year, you know, a lot of that 01 team's gone.
Yep.
And we just, you know, my 4 years, it was up, down, up, and then down again.
Yeah, we had 11 seniors in 02 with B-Dub and Nover and all those guys.
Yeah.
And then we all went and played Wood Bat League here in baseball, or in Jacksonville. There's an adult league. We took 11 22-year-old JU baseball players, went and played in that league and just steamrolled pitchers. our 3 pitchers were Jarvis Frazier, Brian Williams, and me pitching against 30-year-old men. And I think Jarvis had like 20 strikeouts 2 or 3 games in a row. He was just sawing people off. It was awesome. Really wasn't fair. But and then the gang fell apart. So glory days.
There you go.
But yeah, it's just that 01 team was awesome. And then the 99 team with Grant Conyers and those guys, when they went down to Kissimmee, I was on the team but didn't travel to conference. That was a different team. That was a grindy, just grind you out ball club with Dale Johnson and Herb and Bernacki. And looking back, the team was huge.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, I remember coming in and, you know, 5'9 lefty, you know, we only had 3 freshmen my freshman year. It was,
yeah.
I was the only pitcher, and then Hudson and Hurst.
Oh, yeah.
2 outfielders. And so, you know, I walk into our first meeting. I remember it was in the locker room, and I'm just looking around at these giants and thinking, what have I gotten myself into?
215, 6'2", 210, and was middle of the club pack. I mean, we'd shake hands with Miami and Florida and those guys, and Bernacki. I mean, we had all these guys that were 6'5", 6'6", 240, just monsters of men. And
It was awesome.
We were a football team.
Yeah, we were a football team. Yeah, they, just smash baseballs. But, yeah, it was cool times.
It was.
And it's good to kind of keep up with some of the guys from time to time. You see, you know, Jamie Rogers is out coaching football at Swanee, and you read about him in the paper, and you see other guys doing things on LinkedIn or something where they're out doing stuff. It's pretty cool how the group all kind of sticks around.
It is. I mean, that's why we started the show, is, you know, just thinking through, you know, not only the teams that I was a part of, but then the people that were part of the university when I was here, like Jess and Boz and Dove and Alex Boylan, and, you know, all these people. It's like there's a lot of people doing some pretty incredible stuff. And so to come back and talk about, you know, the glory days, like you said, whether that was here at JU or in adult league, it really is a special place. And I think the whole family atmosphere, whether it's actual family, you know, and because I was your son, you know, I followed in your footsteps and married another athlete as well. So, you know, having those types of things, it's just been a cool experience, and to continue to talk about it and bring people back has been awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, well, that's all I've got for you, man. You got anything else you want to talk about?
Man, I was worried. I saw Boz filled 30 minutes like no problem. And I was like, what am I going to talk about for 30 minutes? And
it must be the moderator.
Boz has been much more accomplished and living in New York and highfalutin. I'm just a good old boy in Jacksonville. But no, things are good. So that was awesome. I got nothing else to add. So.
Awesome. Thanks for coming on, buddy.
Yeah, dude.
DoubleTree by Hilton Jacksonville Riverfront resides on the south bank of the St. Johns River in downtown Jacksonville. DoubleTree is where an exceptional locale blends with an array of amenities, personable service, and a better night's sleep. When we're not napping in our luxe bedding, you can probably find us relaxing by the riverfront pool, jogging along the Riverwalk, or sipping a cocktail at our on-site Roots Crit Steakhouse. DoubleTree by Hilton Jacksonville Riverfront, a proud partner of the Jacksonville Dolphins.
At Law Offices of George Hunter PA, we commit to a cooperative process to get the job done to the client's ultimate satisfaction. With a client-first focus, our firm applies an extraordinary work ethic to effectively resolve legal issues. Contact us today at 813-856-2096. Law Offices of George Hunter, a proud partner of Jacksonville University Athletics.
My guest today on Dolphin Tales is Molly Brock of the nationally ranked women's lacrosse program. Molly, thanks so much for joining me.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Well, there are so many different places we could go to start this. You guys have had unbelievable success as far as what you all have done as a team collectively on the field. You've had unbelievable individual success and part of that team goal as well. But really, let's just go back to the start of this season and how you all even approached this. We all know by now what happened last year and the unfortunate way everything came to an early conclusion. But how did you all attack going into this season as a team, and how have you seen that play out here so far?
Yeah, I think it was definitely really tough having our season cut short last year. It was really sad seeing all our seniors go and them not being able to finish out their senior season. But we were definitely one of the luckier teams who have been able to practice all fall, even though we weren't, you know, allowed to play other teams and everything. We were still able to continue to build our chemistry throughout the fall. And I think that was honestly what gave us a leg up. And even going into our first game against High Point, I think playing another opponent for the first time in a year is crazy. And I think just looking at all the different lacrosse games that have been going on, anybody can win any game at this point. A lot of things are up in the air. So we knew that we had to attack this season as hard as we could. And I think a lot with our preparation is what really gave us the leg up against all these big teams. And I think after the High Point game, it was tough still going into our next game against ECU because we almost had to go through a whole preseason again. We weren't playing for another month. So we played High Point, had a month break, and then had to play again. So it was just kind of like a weird rocky start. So I think now our team's just super excited because we're kind of in the groove of, you know, playing game after game and like being able to go with our game plan and execute well. So I think we've just been really excited to be in the middle of all these games. It's been awesome.
We've seen so many examples. I mean, I'm just pulling basketball off the top of my head. Teams that have gotten into a season, boom, a pause for some reason or another, and then it's just hard to pick up where you left off after that. How are you all able to kind of maintain a little bit of that focus, that momentum, despite the layoff?
Yeah, I think a big thing that our team prides in is the extra work that we put in throughout the week. So besides our lift and regular practice, people are constantly coming in for extra film. We're always coming in meetings with coaches, doing individuals, shooting outside. A lot of our upperclassmen also take pride in kind of taking the underclassmen under their wing and really showing them, you know, how to succeed and do well. So everybody on our team, nobody's selfish. Everybody wants to help each other. So I think that's what really benefits us, because everybody wants everybody to succeed. We're a team and we want to do well and get far. And I think that's really shown, especially when we get to play these top 10 teams. And I think it really shows.
You bring up the upperclassman aspect, you being one of them now, but it doesn't feel like that long ago that you were the hotshot freshman that came in and was helping a team to an NCAA tournament win. You're named ASUN tournament MVP that year in capturing a conference championship. How have you managed to go from probably being someone who was looking up to upperclassmen while having success to now helping some of the younger players that were in your seat not that long ago?
Yeah, it's definitely been a weird transition, as you said, coming in as a freshman, and then all of a sudden, I feel like I'm a junior all of a sudden. It's crazy. You got to realize that this happened to everybody, and everybody's kind of on the same page, so you kind of have to just grow and go with the punches. I think me, especially when I was coming in as a freshman, I was definitely kind of one of the quiet ones, not always the one to, like, speak up and everything, and now I think I've really learned to grow and have my own voice and really know the importance of being able to talk to some of the underclassmen and take them under my wing and give them some different tips and tricks and stuff. Because if we want to be able to, you know, beat these big name teams and be nationally ranked, I think we need to take those extra steps. So I think that was really important. And that's something that I've definitely had to learn a lot this year, really fast. So,
well, luckily as a young player, you were able to get a taste of success in how to manage that, because this team 2 weeks ago beats the number 5 team in the land, biggest win, regular season win, unquestionably, in program history. You back that up with another ranked win on the road against Virginia Tech this past weekend, and you are recognized nationally and through the league, winning awards. How do you manage to kind of balance that out, right? Like, you're getting recognized individually. The team is obviously getting this type of attention now as well that you want, but how do you keep focused throughout the course of all of that?
I think it's really important just coming back to our original game plan. I think as a team, we have a really calm mindset when we go into games and we're just confident in our abilities. We stick with the game plan and don't stray away. We're not always concerned about the name on the opponent's jersey or anything. And I think especially having Florida being our first home game in a whole year was really exciting. And I think our whole team was just so excited to finally be on our home turf and play this huge game. Everybody just wanted to bring it and brought their best selves to that game. So it was just awesome trying to come together and, like, bring out that big win. And especially I know I was talking to some of my teammates about it. It was just crazy, because in the game, we were so dialed, so calm, so focused, you know, trying to stay dialed in order to pull this win through. And then right after, I think once time ran out, we realized what we just done. And it was just like pure emotion, pure excitement. That's just such a great moment to have with your teammates. And I'm just so glad we did it. But We did have Virginia Tech the next week, which is another top 20 ranked team. So even though we were so excited about that win, we had to dial it in and get ready for the next week, you know, because if we beat this one team and then lost against the next, we could be labeled as a fluke. And we didn't want to be labeled as that, because we knew that we were that good and we deserved that win. So it was really important for us to acknowledge the win, have fun with it, be super excited with our teammates and everything, but we knew that we had to just go on to the next game and be really focused for that.
Let's take a step back here. Molly Brock, you're from Maryland. Are you all just born with lacrosse sticks in your hands up there? Is that how this works?
I guess so. I mean, there's lacrosse all around Maryland. I grew up with it. It's everywhere. I started playing, I think, when I was in third grade. It's a really big culture up there, and a lot of my friends are lacrosse players, and definitely a lot of my lifetime friends. I don't know. It's just all over the place up in Maryland.
Feels like they need to amend the phrase. Crab cakes and football, that's what Maryland does. Probably needs to be crab cakes and lacrosse. That's what Maryland does.
Definitely.
When did you start playing? How early?
I was around third grade. I had never heard of lacrosse before. My parents have never heard of lacrosse before. My mom was like a tennis player. My dad played soccer here and there. They weren't really, you know, and my mom had heard of lacrosse from one of her coworkers. She's like, what is lacrosse? Like, what is that? And so she decided to sign me up with one of my friends. And ever since then, it just clicked, because I was one of those kids growing up where I was just busy all the time playing a million different sports. And I never really like clicked with one sport in particular. And when I started playing lacrosse, I just fell in love with it. I love being able to just run up and down the field all over the place, you know, burn out some energy. So I think ever since I started playing then, I've loved it ever since. So
what about going through high school? I mean, you discover it, you learn it, you figure out this is your sport as a youngster, and then you get a chance to obviously play at a pretty high level in high school, and then get a chance to attract college attention. What was the process like playing amongst, I'm sure, an extremely competitive environment up in that area of the country in high school girls lacrosse, and then getting the opportunity to maybe go play college and then select JU?
Yeah, so I think once I got to middle school and started playing, got more serious with lacrosse, started playing club and everything, I think I've realized that I was kind of able to take it to the next level. So for my high school, I originally would have gone to a public school that was just in my neighborhood, but my club coach was also the St. John's College High School coach in DC. It was a private school in DC. So she had reached out to me and was interested in seeing if I wanted to play at St. John's, where I'd potentially get more exposure. And they've changed the recruiting process since I was younger, where you can't even talk to coaches, even start the recruiting process until your junior year. So when I was in high school, I was going on trips my freshman year of high school, which is absolutely crazy, coming out of middle school and already thinking about where I want to go to college. So it's definitely such a competitive environment. So I think it's definitely cool that they changed the rule and kind of give, you know, players the ability to develop and everything. But I think being able to pursue my lacrosse career and going to a different high school and meeting new people in order to, you know, put me in a better spot to be recruited and everything was definitely a crazy thing that I had never thought was going to happen when I started playing lacrosse. I don't think my parents did either. So I think just, you know, from playing lacrosse from a young age and like getting to the level, there's just certain steps, especially being in Maryland, that you have to take in order to get recognized by these schools and kind of figure out where you want to go to college and where you want to take your lacrosse career and everything. So it's definitely a crazy process.
Maybe that's the difference between you and me. I grew up and I was like, I'm going to get recruited. And then I didn't. So maybe I should have gone and just enjoyed it a little bit more.
Yeah, it's definitely a crazy process. Like every time for our club team in the summer, we'd have these summer tournaments and we had to email the coaches any coach that we were interested in. I was sending out lots and lots of emails, you know, saying, hey, I'm here, come to my game, like check me out and everything, which is just absolutely insane looking back on it, but definitely cool experience.
I'm with you though. The change in the rule allowing students at the high school level to be able to just at least like get better, enjoy the process a little bit before you're like having to make a decision on where you want to go to college. I mean, how much do you change between the time you're 14 and you're 18? So much.
Yes, a lot. Yeah, it's crazy.
All right, so you've been at JU now. We documented it earlier. Now in your junior year, the sophomore year was, you know, a blip in all things considered. But what about this program is so special? I mean, I know Coach McCord and the way she does things stands out, but what about JU and lacrosse kind of makes this the fit that worked best for you?
Yeah, I think when I was going on my visits and visiting different colleges and universities and everything, I remember when I came down here, it was just the environment. I just had a feeling when I came down here. I knew I wanted to be somewhere warmer, and definitely being near the beach was definitely a big plus. I think when it comes to the team, we have such a great team culture. I wouldn't trade this team for the world. Everyone has such a great time together, and especially having that, our new lacrosse facility. I mean, people are in there all day, like laughing all the time together. It's just always so lively and amazing. And me, I live at the beach. So being able to have that, you know, home at school where I'm constantly around my teammates all the time is just so amazing. And everybody just loves each other. And I haven't met a closer group of girls in my entire life. So I'm just so happy that I'm able to be a part of that.
That's great. And the ability to have a facility to where you guys can gather amongst each other. And that's been one of the hardest things, I think, with a lot of teams in the last year. I mean, you were separated from each other last year and didn't see your teammates for, you know, how long, months. And to be able to come back and have kind of pick up that camaraderie where you left off with some of your teammates, but introduce the new teammates into that. And then almost sounds like you guys almost haven't missed a beat in that regard, which I know a lot of teams in the country across many sports can't say the same.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So where do you guys go from here? I mean, the goal is to keep winning. I understand that. But how do you all manage that? The ranking keeps climbing. You're 11th in the country now. I know it sounds a little bit like what I asked earlier, but here it's not going to get any easier as far as attention and everything like that as you all continue to approach the latter half of the season and then attacking an ASUN championship again.
Yeah, I think preparation is just such a big key for our team. I think so far we've done a really good job of executing and doing what we need to do in order to, you know, take down these top 20 opponents. Since we just have our in conference teams, I think we just really need to like keep developing our play, keep growing as a team and improving, and keep the ball rolling, and honestly have a goal of being undefeated for the rest of the season, which I think is very doable. But we need to kind of keep on track and not let up. And just because we've, you know, beaten these two of the top 20 teams doesn't mean that we can let up and think that it's all done. We need to keep getting better and keep improving and carry that through the rest of the season and into next season. So we keep improving. And I think, again, what I was saying before, with just all the extra work and preparation that everyone puts in, I'm confident that we're going to be able to do that, and I'm not worried about it. So I think just preparing and keep grinding it out on the field, on and off the field, I think is just super important.
All right. You guys work hard. I know that, but give me a good story about how you all keep things loose, a little lighthearted, you know, keep the pressure cooker from boiling over there.
Yeah. I think what I was saying about our team culture and everything, we're constantly laughing, cracking jokes with each other. We know when to be serious and when to like joke around with each other and have a good time. We're honestly great friends off the field, just not on the field too. We work well, so well together on the field, but we're all best friends off the field and love hanging out with each other. And we all have great relationships with our coaches, and they'll join us in on the joking around, especially on bus rides. Love bus rides and traveling with the team, because we have our time to dial in when we're in film or practice, but when we're all just hanging out and kind of off the clock and everything, everybody's just always having such a great time with each other. So it's definitely, we're definitely focused and a motivated team, but we know how to have fun and joke around with each other and be great friends.
Well, that's the important thing. Got to find that balance, strike that balance, keep things loose while staying focused the whole time. Molly, congrats on the success so far. I know it's far from over, and I know that you guys are going to stay locked in the rest of the season, and best of luck the rest of the way, and look forward to hopefully seeing y'all raising up a trophy at the end of all this when it's all said and done.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
The Hampton Inn Oceanfront Jacksonville Beaches location is perfect for everything from a weekend getaway, a corporate conference, or even a beautiful beach wedding. Our heated lagoon-style pool with cascading waterfalls and rock grottos sets the mood for rest and relaxation. Our unique event space and full-service catering department offers everything you need for any special event. Join us at the Tides Beach Bar and Grill, where you can enjoy the ocean breeze and your favorite libation. Call the Hampton Inn Oceanfront for more details at 904-241-2311.
Your local Napa Auto Care Center is independently owned, operates by a written code of ethics, and provides service you can trust. Put your vehicle in the care of ASE certified technicians in your neighborhood. They're backed by Napa. Quality parts, national warranties. That's Napa know-how. Your Napa Auto Care Center might just be the treated me fairly, I love those guys place you've been looking for your vehicle. Stop by today at
jacksnapa.com. We'd like to thank both guests who appeared here today with us on Dolphin Tales. First up, you heard from baseball alum and current member of the real estate community, Jason Riles. After that, my conversation with Molly Brock of Women's Lacrosse. This has been episode 29 of Dolphin Tales, presented by Baptist Health. For my co-host, Pat Sitkins, I'm Scott Manzi saying so long. Stay safe, and we look forward to bringing you more great conversations from the Jacksonville Athletics community next time.